Hi, I am John London. This is Thinking It Through, a bi-monthly podcast exploring the stories and personal geography of people that you may or you may not know. Today, I'd like to share with you the first of a series of interviews I have recently done with young professional women of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Zoe Prinz Flash is a professional photographer in Minneapolis who I first met about 10 years ago. She owns and operates Zoe Prinz Flash Photography. Her work has evolved over time, with half of it now being weddings and the other half being a range of photo projects completed either in her studio or at various off-site locations. Zoe's small business, like everybody else's, is greatly challenged during the current COVID-19 economic downturn. But her ability to work organically and her ongoing attempt to morph her business into a new form speak to her creativity and persistence as a professional photographer. My discussion was a comfortable reconnect with Zoe. Her friendship with my daughter has been our common bond, but she's always stood out as an intelligent, driven, and highly creative person. I was glad to have caught up with her in this conversation the other day. Now, here's Zoe.
Hey.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. Zoe Prinz Flash, South Minneapolis. I should share this with people that might hear this, that Zoe and I have known each other probably 10 years, 9 years or so since
2010,
Morse, Minnesota, right?
I think I remember specifically you driving your daughter and I back to Minneapolis, and we were listening to some contemporary rock music, and you willingly headbanged along with us,
yes.
Which we appreciated.
One had to do that, yeah, as they're driving, yeah. It was easier to do that than to argue with you about your taste in music. But
totally.
No, it was great to meet you, of course, and we've kind of known of each other and known each other on and off over the last 8 or 9 years, thanks to Anna and stuff. So one of the things that in thinking it through, this podcast that I'm up to is asking people who they are today and where they are. Why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are today?
Yeah, so I am a freelance photographer working in Minneapolis. Up until now, my life has been pretty seasonal. I work weddings, I photograph weddings, and then I fill in the rest of the year with portraits of musicians and families and people who I bring in, which is downtown Minneapolis, so pretty close to where I live.
So you have a studio as well?
Yeah, I have a studio that I share with my photo partner, Crystal, and we work together, create that space, but we also work weddings together as well, so kind of a full collaboration.
How long have you had that studio? It's been a few years, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been 2 years. We signed in August. This is kind of a precarious time for the studio, so it may no longer be with us come summer. Things kind of fall into unpredictable places with freelance work.
Right, absolutely, yes. Yeah, COVID-19 is, as I say, it's screaming across the country right now, and we're sheltering in place, and obviously small businesses are taking the biggest hit, so you guys are scrambling, I'm sure. How did you meet your partner in this?
Crystal is 8 years older than me, and she's a St. Paul person. She lives in West St. Paul. So it was kind of a strange circumstance that we met. She ended up photographing the wedding of friends of mine who, at first, when I found that out, I kind of took it personally that they didn't hire me. So
yeah,
I was
doing?
Curious about her.
Yeah.
So I said, who's this Crystal?
Yeah.
And I looked her up, and I remember really being impressed. And I thought, oh, she's really good. And so over the years, those next few years, we, you know, corresponded through the internet, and she would send me jobs when she was booked. And we kind of created this relationship where, you know, we're colleagues. She's handing me off jobs if she's busy. And then at one point, I think she said, can we get a glass of wine? And what I didn't tell her was I had just turned 21, and she had no idea how old I was. So I said, of course we can have a glass of wine. I can do
that. Not? I'll go anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah, and we sat down and we talked for like 5 hours and had lots of glasses of wine. And we've become, you know, sister friends since then. And that's, I think it's been like 8 or 9 years now. So.
Well, that's great. That's great. Yeah. well, you know, once this settles down a little bit, you guys might have to reconfigure or rethink of your collaboration, but it's been working out pretty well up to now.
Yeah, we always say that we work better together. Mm-hmm. We have a really natural kind of unspoken way that we see people and see events and see moments.
Yeah.
And I prefer to work with her. The mm-hmm. price point's a little high for some people, but it's worth it.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm interested in and kind of tracing your path to where you are today. But before we do that, I think we need to drop into a little bit about Zoe. How did you get into this kind of artistic, entrepreneurial kind of thing? And I think that probably goes back to childhood at some point. There must be some places or people that are important to you that kind of set you going on this line of work. Tell me a little bit about where you grew up and your family.
Yeah, I grew up in what's called Marcy Homes, which is a historic neighborhood in Minneapolis that borders 35W, the main highway, and separates us from Dinkytown, which is the college neighborhood. So our neighborhood consisted of primarily rentals, college students on our block. Right. And then as you went into the neighborhood, there was a lot of historic family homes, but our block was essentially frat row rejects, and so I grew up around very rowdy college students my entire childhood and adolescence.
The frat row rejects crowd.
Yes. Yeah,
I can imagine.
I learned what binge drinking was at a very young age. unfortunately.
Yeah. Wow. So, what? Who was it? Was it mom, dad, and you? Mom, dad, you, and siblings? Or tell me a little bit
I'm an only child.
Right.
Just me. Right. My parents. My mom works at the university, so the proximity to school was good for work.
Absolutely.
But yeah, at a young age, I am really extroverted. I'm really social, and mm-hmm. having no siblings, I think, made that characteristic more pronounced in me.
Yeah.
And I, you know, my dad, I think when I was 8, built me a roller cart, kind of shopping station that he let me park up front of our house, and I would sell things like lemonade and cookies. And then as I got more desperate for social interaction and money, I would start braiding people's hair for, you know, 25 cents or drawing a picture and will you buy my picture?
Nice.
So it evolved after that.
Was your shingle like right out in front of your house or up on, didn't you have a porch on your house? I think I remember your house somehow.
Yeah. I think it's where I learned the hustle. I would start on the porch and I'd notice that no one would kind of notice me. And so I would creep out into this, you know, the sidewalk. And then by the end of it, I was like right in the middle of the sidewalk. So you had to go around me if you wanted to walk by.
That's right.
Oh, I learned.
Yeah. So even as a little kid, you were doing that kind of thing and going to school in the neighborhood. You went to a neighborhood school, I assume. And
yeah, I did. I went to Marcy Open School, which was, for me, very stimulating as a social person. It's mm-hmm. a mixed grade school. So there was three grade levels in our classroom at one mm-hmm. time. So having a lot of access to older people kind of fueled my social life.
Is that a K-8 school? Do you remember even? K-8, K-6, K-12? I don't know.
I think it's still a K-8. It was K-8.
Okay.
And I actually left in sixth grade to go to private school. So my experience there was only through half of its grade range.
Yeah. And then where'd you go? In sixth grade, where'd you go?
I went to Mounds Park Academy.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Did
you wear a polo shirt? Did you have a polo
I wore a polo shirt. The uniform came at such a bad time. I think sixth grade is really when, especially young girls are super socially attuned and want to impress each other. And so having like guidelines, you know, was hard for me.
No, absolutely.
I was one of the only people from Minneapolis, and so that was, I remember that being really hard. There's a lot of wealth, and there was a lot of bullying, and there was a lot of kind of conservative values in some of the students that I'd never experienced before. So it was really difficult for me.
So how'd mom and dad come up with that school? Is that the one that was closest to where they were, or?
My parents, you know, knowing them, like, this is, everything is methodical. There's, you know, a lot of thought about these things.
Uh-huh.
We did a lot of observations. I did a lot of visiting of many different schools. And this one won out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't even remember why. I think it was like, it was a fairly like liberal school.
Sure.
There was a very, you know, heightened attention to academics versus any kind of like religion. It was, you know, secular. And I think that there was also the promise of sports, which I was a swimmer at the time. So.
Ah, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So
Did you and Anna talk about swimming and diving and all that stuff ever? Yeah.
Yeah, we did. And we also talked about how we had mutual friends at Mounds Park Academy and how if we had changed maybe one or two circumstances, we might have met in sixth grade.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So how long were you at Mounds Park?
I stayed there until eighth grade, and then I petitioned my parents to take me back. God forbid, take me back to public school.
Really? That was it. That was enough. That middle school stuff was enough for you. That was.
Yeah. And it was a really hard decision for my mom to kind of, for, I guess for us to make as a family, because there was, you know, it's incredibly high achieving academic situation there. And Minneapolis public schools aren't funded well. But I was really struggling socially. I mean, I was really dealing with a lot of bullying. And so we like the decision to even go there in the first place, the decision to take me out involved, you know, my parents asking me to create a PowerPoint presentation, arguing my case and making the point. And I did. I did what I could.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Contrast, and I'll cut this out, but contrast that with the Lund decision to take people into Saudi Arabia. There was no discussion.
Yeah.
We just wrapped them up and said, come on.
Let's go.
Yeah. Whoa. Yeah. So anyways, you leave Mounds Park, you prepare a PowerPoint. Do you still have that, by the way? Do you still have access to that somehow?
I'm sure my mom does. I mean, at this point, this was, what year was this? 2004?
Oh man. Yeah. Yeah.
So it exists somewhere. And I think I remember specifically, and this is kind of classic me, but I color coded the pages to kind of incite different moods.
Oh,
so
nice.
the page for South High School, all the benefits of going to South High School was all pink.
Right.
And the Mounds Park page was black.
Yeah, exactly. The Death Star of schools probably at the time. Yeah. So did you go to South then? Is that where you ended up going?
I went to South. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And that was at least at that time, from what I knew, and I think I was a teacher at that time, South had a pretty good reputation for being pretty creative and trying to hold on to people and stimulate people. Did you find it to be a good place for you?
Yeah, yes and no.
Yeah.
I think I entered right around the time where we were getting less access to kind of testing out different artistic hobbies. They were kind of limiting what we could do. The darkroom closed that year, so I never had access to the darkroom, which would have maybe changed things, I guess, for me.
Were you interested in photography at that point?
High school is where I got my start, but I didn't get into it until my second or third year.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about we can leave high school alone for a second unless you want to get back into it.
Please.
But let's absolutely leave it. But tell me a little bit about your interest in cameras and taking pictures. How did that come about?
Well, my dad is a photographer, and he worked as a photographer when he was in his 20s in San Francisco. And he's shot, you know, my whole life. And I've always been really aware of his eye and his attention to geometry. And that, you know, somewhere in me that kind of genetically transferred, I think. But I never got into film, at least not, you know, until later in my career. But I think I picked up a small digital point and shoot camera when I was about 16. And I immediately turned it around and I pulled that kind of back lens out. It was one of those that, like, you know, you can move the back lens out and flip it around so you can see yourself.
Right.
And I think I just immediately started taking photos of myself constantly.
Right.
So exactly. I was like, this
it's
is the
world. Yeah. It's a great thing for a high schooler. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it also paired really quickly with me getting and downloading my first copy of Photoshop. Okay. And so I would spend hours, you know, importing photos and just messing with them and seeing what I could do.
Wow. Yeah. So that's on your own, without taking like any kind of class or anything like that, but just kind of going on what you'd seen your dad do. And
yeah, totally. It was, the age of MySpace.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
MySpace. Beginning of social media. Yeah. Right. So I think there's a lot of like attention to kind of how we perceive ourselves and what, you know, what we're putting out there. And I think just really tinkering, I could have spent, I mean, I spent hours and hours doing it just on my own. Yeah.
Sure. And do you have access to those kinds of things still? I don't think you can get a hold of MySpace anymore, but.
Yeah. I definitely have all the photos, but it's on a hard drive that it's one of those hard drives where I plug it in and nothing happens and it makes me scared. So I just turn it off and don't think about it.
Right. Well, back to your story a little bit. Now you're, as far as geography is concerned, were you traveling around with your family? Did you guys go on trips? Did you have places that you would go and imagine yourself at ever, or were you pretty much in Minnesota?
Yeah. I grew up going to Cape Cod, you know, once or twice a year. My grandmother still lives out there.
Is that your mother's mother?
My mom's mom. Yep.
Yep.
So she, you know, drew us out to the East Coast very often. And that's a trip that we would take twice a year. And then my dad's family's in Kansas, Overland Park, so outside of the city, Missouri. And that drive down to Kansas from Minneapolis was something we took, you know, many times a year. So those are the two places that really took us. And beyond that, I never traveled outside of the country until I was, until a few years ago.
Yeah, yeah. And on those trips, did you do some picture taking just casually as a kid in the car? And
yeah, like I said, there was a definite focus on myself for the first few years of this new hobby.
Absolutely.
Me and my friends and, you know.
So it was you in Kansas, you and...
Yes. Yes. But then I started to kind of explore outward and turn the camera around on what I was seeing. And it's like the basics. You're learning how to see things again.
Right.
And so you kind of focus in on, you know, object, background. And then if I think about these images I started to make, I start seeing this kind of progression of getting more bold with my composition or focusing on humans that aren't my family. And so forth.
To me, sometimes photography reminds me of mindfulness just in your face. I mean, it's just like, whoa, I'm aware of what I'm looking at.
Here's the box. Here's the parameter. Here's my container.
Yeah. So when you were young, like let's say when you were in high school and going in, even into college, did you see yourself as becoming a photographer at that point or?
No, I didn't. And I didn't really make the mental switch until second year of college, actually, even though I was working as a photographer at the time. And I'm not sure I look back now and I'm not sure why I put up such a fight. But I think part of it was that I didn't want to ruin this thing that I loved and I didn't want to make it an obligation or a chore.
So you weren't really, so you're fighting this thing that you have to get a career going in photography, or just thinking that you really like it and you didn't know? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And I, to make it something that I had to do to kind of survive and make ends meet sounded kind of like it kind of makes it unsexy to like, really, you know, do that to what you care about.
Yeah.
And I also think, you know, a lot of my interest in at the end of high school and the beginning of college, you know, I went to Morris with a degree in psychology in mind. Is mental health advocacy work. And so that was kind of, you know, my thought was, I'll do this job. I'll have kind of a schedule and a routine that doesn't involve kind of constant hustle. And then I'll do this on the side because I love it.
Sure.
And that was the model I'd seen my parents kind of show me, which is like, they had these jobs, they love them, they care about them, but they have these hobbies that they continue to work on kind of on the side.
So nice without all the clutter of siblings and people that are at cross purposes and things. Yeah.
That's nice.
That's great. I didn't know you were, I guess I did know that you were an only child, but it's interesting to think about. And you're pretty much totally aware of the advantages of that. When you're thinking about shooting in more as a college student, you're in psychology, or you're thinking about psychology, or you're at the University of Minnesota Morris. Did you take photography classes, or were you just kind of working at a studio, or how did you kind of play around with photography at Morris?
So I transferred my major to studio art with an emphasis in photography my second year, and gave up the psychology degree. And that's when I took the first and I think only photography class that was available at Morris. It's a really wonderful college, but I think if I had, you know, photography in mind when I was applying, I probably wouldn't have picked the school, just because that's not their strong suit. I think, you know, psychology and, like, you know, other kind of disciplines are really, they have really great academics. But there's not a lot to, you know, there wasn't a lot, you know, available for photography.
Well, let's face it, like in the middle of nowhere. Yeah.
And I was also, you know, already working as a photographer, and I would go home every weekend, you know, I think also just to connect to the city and, you know, the opportunities that the city presented me with.
Right.
So I felt, and maybe this was some of my ego, but I kind of felt like I was above it, and I didn't really take much out of that program. And I think I learned a lot on those weekend trips home.
Right. Right. Just coming back. And were you working at a studio up in Morris, at some photography studio?
I didn't have any studio work until the studio that I, you know, finding families that would hire me, and then just playing. Mm-hmm. So kind of my friends were my subjects, and I turned the lens on them, you know, most of the time.
Did you have a camera with you all the time?
Yeah. I've been doing a lot of traveling recently, and that's kind of what I've been noticing. And I have my camera out all the time now that I've been traveling, and it's been really nice to kind of remember. But then I have this struggle where I'm like, all right, I have a film camera, I have a digital camera, I have a phone. Which one? I can take all of these things.
Right, right. And if we get back to just graduating from Morris and so on, when you got out of there, were you pretty much set on taking pictures and trying to make money doing that?
Yeah, I had slowly been building kind of a wedding career every summer from the first year of college through the end. And so I had weddings booked for the summer. I had a nanny job lined up to kind of help me with supplementary money. And I was, I was like, all right, now I can finally live full time as a photographer, or part time in Minneapolis. Here we go. Right. Let's do it.
Right. Wow. Yeah, that's interesting. Was that primarily shooting film at that point with the weddings and so on? Or are you digital, or depends? Or
it was all digital. I didn't really pick up film until a few years ago. So it's kind of exploring a new medium for me.
Uh-huh. And this is way out of context, but how do you like working with film?
I prefer it.
Yeah.
I'm embarking on a project that I dreamt up 2 days ago, and it's only with film, and it's exciting. Uh-huh. There's something very magical about the idea of not having to kind of pick or choose or adjust, tinker with color, tinker with the, you know, edit. It's just, here's what it is. You know, it's almost like it just feels very natural and very kind of organic.
Right. It is indeed raw, right?
It is indeed raw.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. No, it's.
Yeah. Well, I think also being like growing up in like the age of like, you know, computers, and it was kind of the age of choice, you know, so many choices we could, you know, adjustments you can make. And I think it's interesting that I took that kind of, kind of laboratory that I was able to work with as a child, and I wanted to go backwards. I wanted to go back to like less choice, more kind of organic, more analog.
If we take a look at some of the early gigs that you were getting, they're primarily weddings, but you did do musical stuff too, right? You're in South Minneapolis. Weren't you aligned with a band or two? Or I can't quite recall.
Yeah, it's interesting. I kind of in my mind skipped over that part of my career, but I did start before weddings even.
Yeah.
So when I was 18, I did start working with a band called Doomtree. They're a hip hop collective. They still exist today, and I'm very close with all of them at this point. We're all kind of family.
Cool.
And I brought my first digital SLR that I bought with my earnings working as a lifeguard in the summer. Brought it to their show. Was a big fan. Took some photos. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And I think the following year, Dessa, she's a member of this collective. She's also a writer.
Right.
And she had been kind of traveling around working on poetry and spoken word. And so she came to South High School I took her photo for the newspaper, and we linked up, and she invited me on, and I worked with them for, and still work for them sometimes, but I worked for them for 10 years.
Yeah.
Pretty consistently. Yeah.
No, I remember some of that stuff, seeing some of that stuff and your postings and things. Right. And I was looking at your website a little bit, and I know that you probably don't look at it all the time, but you did mention that one of the things you liked about working with musicians is that it was really kind of an authentic sliver of reality. I mean, as they got exuberant about what they were doing, you could really capture that.
Yeah.
And you enjoyed that that feeling. Weddings are a little different. They're not always, I mean, in my head, you know, the wedding photos is always like, you know, it's that typical Midwest thing. Like, all right, now we're going to ask the groom party to come over here and pose with Father so-and-so and and all of that. But your wedding photos, at least some of the ones that I've seen, tend to be a little different than that. Tell me a little bit about how your style of shooting weddings has evolved over time.
I feel very lucky that I've been able to work with clients that tend to lean on the more non-traditional end of the spectrum in terms of the wedding industry. But I think for me, you know, you're right in saying there's this connection between watching a musician lose focus and kind of really get sucked into the moment is something I see with people when they get emotional. And, you know, I will tell clients often when we're having meetings together that part of my job, most of my job actually, is to kind of walk around and really just take the temperature of the room and see kind of where there's emotional output. And for me, I see that manifest so visually. And so, you know, as I've gone, I'm at this point 10 years into my career, I guess, I've just really been able to kind of stick with observing those moments and capturing the kind of energy that comes out. And it's a lot of candid work, and I don't, you know, force the post portrait, but it is something that I'm getting more experience with having a studio and working with studio lighting is how to pose, but then how to let go and really let people soften into themselves.
Yeah, that's got to be an interesting dance. Yeah, how to do that.
It is, yeah.
Because people are all different, the way they react to a lens in their face, too.
They just, and they're also really different in how they interact with energy. And so sometimes, you know, as an expressive social person, I have to learn when amping people up or getting people excited works, or when really pulling back and kind of just letting them be works. And that's also part of the dance that I kind of work with when I'm shooting weddings. But there's also something that I've been noticing that's increasing in trend, which is the kind of elopement wedding or the small wedding or the courthouse wedding, which involves really simple, private, intimate ceremonies, usually civil ceremonies, followed by a dinner with family. And those, you know, those weddings are also sweet and intimate and beautiful, you know, in their own way, which are, you know, kind of smaller.
As you do this stuff, as you kind of think about your craft and what you're doing, it sounds like you're adding your own creative touch to things. But are there mentors out there? Do you look at some great wedding photographers? Do you look at different things, or are you just putting the Zoe touch on things?
Yeah, it's a mix. It depends. Crystal Liepa, my photo partner, will always be my biggest inspiration, and so I look at her work as much as I can, and we share work back and forth all the time. Mm-hmm. For me, sometimes looking at wedding photographers and colleagues inspires me. Sometimes it makes me feel insecure. And so I kind of think about when I want to engage in that kind of, you know, peeking around. But yeah, I definitely find that looking at my old work inspires me to make, you know, new, better, and more kind of Zoe-esque images. Right. But it's a balance. It's a balance for me.
Right. But it's unique. I mean, you have your own brand. You have kind of your own way of doing things, it sounds like to me.
It's a hard thing to kind of try and describe, but I guess what I do know is that when I see it, I know it, you know?
How I feel about it. Well, that's a good thing to know, that's your photo and not somebody else's. Did you ever think of yourself as more than just a wedding photographer, though, as you got into, I know you have to do it for the money and for the livelihood and so on, and you enjoy it. It sounds like you enjoy the challenges of it.
I love it, yeah.
Any other aspect of photography kind of creep into your consciousness on occasion?
Yeah, and it's actually something that was really there's a huge presence of it in my life, the beginning of being interested in photography. And it's, you know, because, like, you know, we mentioned earlier, that kind of decision to make this my career did kind of take some of the joy of just making for myself away. And that's just kind of, I think, the reality of it.
Plus, you had to walk to every wedding. Didn't you have to walk to every wedding?
I had to, because I had to hitchhike to every wedding.
Exactly.
John's referencing the fact that I got my driver's license last year.
I'll be in Albert Lee sometime between noon and five tomorrow. Yeah.
Please pay me large sums of money.
So you are driving? You are driving?
I'm a driver. I'm finally a driver.
So I turned you down because I just got too chicken shit about having another driver in my midst. I went through the three.
It's too much PTSD.
For the best.
Yeah, you would have died early from a heart attack. We prevented this. So.
Oh my God. Oh my God. That was so funny. So now we take you up to now, and of course everything, your primary funds have been through weddings. Is that correct? I mean, your primary work has been through weddings.
It's kind of shifted over the last few years.
Okay.
At first, yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. The last, because I think the addition of the studio has, allowed me to work way more than I, normally would. Before, I would describe my job as having an on season and an off season.
Yeah.
And now it seems that I'm doing half weddings and half, other portraits. So fans and families and headshots and people.
Cool.
Three dominant things in the studio are headshot sessions, which are really short and quick and have a backdrop. Mm-hmm. I just did one yesterday, actually, at a social distance of 6 feet.
Yeah.
There's a lot of bands that come in and work with me in the studio. And families, on occasion, I like to work with families outside and kind of in the natural environment of a home.
Yeah. Your work now, as you stated a couple times, is really going to be altered because of all of this. So how do you see? Nobody knows, but how do you see things? How do you see things in your habits or your work life possibly changing? I mean, without getting draconian about it and saying that.
I know, too much bad news.
Yeah. Waitress at a breakfast.
Yeah, I'll be trading in my camera for something else.
Oh my God.
I think it's, I was thinking about this earlier when I was prepping for this conversation, but something that's really unique about the freelance life, and anyone who's a freelancer will be able to empathize with this, but it's the hustle life. And it really involves you being kind of in half survival mode and half not survival mode. Whatever that is. And you're always kind of trying to figure out what's next. What can I do? How can I manipulate the situation? How can I shapeshift to accommodate this new environment that I'm in? Whether that new environment is I have a studio now and I have more bills, or whether that environment is a pandemic that prevents me from being around people, which is my job.
Right.
So I'm not sure. I felt really down and out about everything. I've been, having weddings postponed and things canceled, and it's really hard to see that you built kind of. I was thinking about all these kind of pieces that make a freelance life possible. And I thought, this is just another chance to kind of turn on my heel and shapeshift again to kind of figure out what this moment can kind of lend itself to. And so I picked up these two film cameras from my dear colleague, really amazing, inspirational photographer to me, Carrie Thompson. And I put it out there on the internet. I'll do these sidewalk portraits in film, two shots at dusk of whoever you're staying with. And 25 people flooded my inbox, and I've been biking to people's houses four times a day in the evening and just taking these really simple shots.
Very cool.
It's an example of how the hustle kind of makes you think on your feet.
Right. Yeah. It's resilience. Yeah. Seriously. Yeah, no, it is. I mean, to be cliche, but really it is. And it comes out of, you've got a ton of, what is it about running a business? To me, it's terrifying, right? Because I was always in this little culture of schools, right? Tenure, and then, something awful would have to happen for me not to have a job the next year. But you're on this whole different train. What is it that, what kind of competencies do you have to have to be successful? I know that you're right in the middle of trying to figure some of that out, but what would you say are the attributes necessary to be successful doing something like what you're doing, or what musicians are trying to do now, or I don't know, everybody probably.
I think it's a little bit of what kind of we were just talking about with being able to kind of be kind of always in survival mode. There's this adrenaline that you experience when you kind of just don't know what's going to happen, and you never know, right? This isn't a new feeling for me. Can I make it through the season? Can I not? What's going to happen? So I think it's resiliency for sure. And I think it's also the ability to kind of connect with people. Being a social creature has really, I think, aided being an entrepreneur, because you can brainstorm together. You can kind of come up with ideas. And I find that to be really valuable.
And it's such a shared medium, right? Too. It's not, yeah. I mean, photography, if you're working with people, it's such a shared thing. So it's a nice little collaboration. Yeah.
Well, you can't overstate the importance of social media and the internet that has, you know, helped blossom people's careers, especially people who are self-employed, because it's been such an amazing megaphone that you can really run, you can run the ship yourself. You don't have to take out an ad in the paper anymore.
Tell me a little bit about COVID-19 aside, your aspirations. What are you thinking about in the future? What would you like to do in 5 years? Where would you like to be in 5 years, let's say?
It's been on my mind a lot lately, especially because kind of pre-COVID stuff, I was really traveling a lot. I was going abroad, you know, every month-ish.
You were in Morocco, right? Weren't you in Morocco?
I was in Morocco. I went to Vancouver. I went to Greece. So I've been really traveling. Mm. Yeah. So I think I've been thinking about this question a lot. And I've always thought about, you know, creating a space, being more of a curator and creating kind of an event space or a working space that kind of functions as meeting house, bar, restaurant, gallery, you know, brainstorm hub space. I think that for me as a social, you know, I keep mentioning that I'm social. Can you tell that I'm socially depleted?
Yeah,
I need
people. Exactly.
But I really
my God.
Yeah. But I like bringing people
this
together.
This is the first of 25 Zooms for you today. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, to get my fill. Yeah. With creating, you know, portrait projects and creating, you know, photographic projects that are meaningful to me, you know, taking photos of where I'm traveling, creating a space, maybe, you know, eventually a permanent space in a place that I end up that kind of brings people together. And I always want to take photos. I always want to take photos of people. But I also really love taking photos for myself, which ironically don't usually involve people. Mm-hmm. Most of my personal work is very, you know, geometric, similar to my father's, focusing on kind of shape and formal quality and line. And so that's something that I'm also really passionate about.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the other side. I was kind of talking about that earlier. I mean, there's got to be some other things that run through your head outside of just the monetary end of things. But isn't so much money as it sounds to me like it's just a social collaboration, as well as kind of going back to some things that you've known earlier in your life in photography, thinking back to your dad and different things. Does your dad still take photos?
Yeah, he does. Yep. Ah.
Do you guys talk about photos? Do you talk about
photography? Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, he's definitely inspired my kind of personal, I guess, you know, we joke about this, but we'll go out together to take photos sometimes.
Right.
And we'll come back and look at what we have. And I have everything he has, but my shots are vertical and his are horizontal, or vice versa.
That's interesting.
It's like the same shot.
Interesting.
But his are always better than mine, Dad, if you're listening.
Well, you know.
His are always better.
Without thinking, you might just defer a little bit to the old man. Yeah. Might as well let him think what he thinks, you know, whatever.
It's funny. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You go ahead.
I was thinking about how, you know, all the shops closed down because of COVID-19. Sure. And so I was left with a bunch of print orders that people had ordered for me, but no printer. Because the printing place closed down. So I called my dad and I said, hey, can I pay you to print my photos? And he said, absolutely. So he's also my print shop right now.
Nice. Well, listen, I'm going to wrap this up a little bit, but I want to thank you for spending some time with me and just chatting about who you are today, from where you've come from, and some of your dreams for the future. I definitely need to spend some more time with you and talk to you about some things that I'm even thinking about. So this has been great.
Cool.
Thanks a lot for talking. Hey, I want to thank Zoe again for her time and willingness to share with us how her current business has come about and what she's up to these days. It's always great to find someone who loves what they do and is willing to flex that passion in order to survive as a business and, yes, as a professional. And these times definitely demand that kind of attitude. You know, there's so much more to Zoe's story, and we'll have to check back with her. Well, thanks again for listening. This has been Thinking It Through. I'm John Lund, and be safe and healthy always. Until next time.